guy selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Brandon Carnan. We have Mr. Frank Fahey. We're loaded up this morning like we have every money. SP Futures down 2. Dow Futures down 27. They were all up last night, some. But it sure seems in this market that every time we're up, somebody comes by with a big club, and it's like, whack-a-mole. What do you think, Frank?
I agree.
Are you one
Thursday, we're 3% lower than last Thursday. But it was a quiet night last night. We only had about a 20-point range.
But it was, like I said, it was up some. It was up after the Bears won, then down after the Patriots lost or something, huh?
Yeah, because I think the market really relates to the Bears right now. as opposed to some of the other things going on in our country.
That's true. But it's kind of hard to... Did you guys catch the Saturday Night Live? I think about Trump. It was hilarious.
I heard it was very good. I didn't see it.
They did a It's a Wonderful Life spiel in black and white. Like, what would have happened if he had lost? So the guy who's the African-American guy was Clarence.
Michael Che?
Yeah, he was Clarence, the
no,
angel.
No, Keenan.
Oh, Keenan Wyatt, yeah.
Yeah, he was the angel. And they kept walking around and go, why are these people smiling? Well, because you lost. Then he and Cohen were still big buddies and, you know, okay. It was funny. Those guys, they do have good writers. It was very well done. But he's, anyway. Well, then it was, somebody else, the part about the hair. Somebody had, he had done something, some program that he cut or something, where some Muslim was allowed into the country and actually has a, had an invention for growing your own hair, so his hair was his own. But the guy was Muslim. Betty, is that a riot or what? So some Muslim guy invented a thing where he could get rid of the toupe. So,
the best part, though, was his response, where he said the courts should, his quote was, the courts should test this, that it was unfair news.
He's pulling out his hair.
He says it has to be illegal to do that to someone.
God. But those guys, they are funny, though. I mean, whether you think it goes too far or not, it's another issue. But but political satire has been around, like, forever. You don't see too many cartoons anymore. Like the guys used to write the satirical cartoons. I remember at the end of his career, how long was Tricky Dick's nose and how big were his ears? For guys, they kept getting like bigger by the week, and it was just.
Well, the nose was like Pinocchio.
Well, how many people here get a newspaper? That was the medium for distributing the cartoons.
Well, that's true.
I must say that I still get the paper. In fact, right in my bag right now, I've got a hard copy of the Wall Street Journal, the Chicago Sun-Times, and the Chicago Tribune.
I like reading them too. And I still...
I get it delivered, and I'm the youngest guy in my block getting it delivered.
Well that's the thing. I do agree that there aren't that many of us getting them delivered on a regular basis anymore.
You know what? I find like I miss articles I read online.
Yeah, I do too. I like to be able to just scan through the paper and page by page and not just in the order. And it's also easier to find articles in print paper than it is online. Not from a research standpoint, not, you know, if you Google something and you're looking for a particular article, but just to kind of peruse the paper and find something that's of interest.
I got a couple things of serious note we'll talk to you gentlemen about. One is I was the market last week, and are we just talking about a repricing and also want to talk about some guy on the air that, why do I get to the point where I have to criticize these people? I shouldn't, but this one hits pretty close to home. On Friday, I'll start out with this one. The, anybody who happened to be watching the market Fridays saw that, Johnson & Johnson basically got its ass kicked. It was down like 15.5 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with the baby powder. They had a, was it just, have they lost just one court case so far? I think it's just one, isn't it?
I don't know how many they've lost.
Big money, though, wasn't it, the one they lost?
I don't know that much about it, sorry.
Okay. Well, these lawyers are supposed to know everything, aren't they, Frank? It's like the engineer on Gilligan's Island. He knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was an engineer. Anyway, but the
he was a professor.
He was a professor, yeah. And he's supposed to know everything. Evidently, they've been marketing, without getting too graphic, they've been marketing Johnson's baby powder forever as essentially, shall we say, safe on your private parts. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
And evidently, this lady picked up, I don't know what cervical cancer was. Maybe see if you can dig up the Johnson & Johnson cancer case, right? And she, I don't know if she died or not, but hopefully.
I think, yeah, the woman that I saw interviewed over the weekend has passed away.
They interviewed her from the grave?
No, they interviewed her from the summer, and she was talking about not being able to spend any time with her grandchild, who was due to be born about this time of year.
Ah, okay.
Jury awards $4.7 billion in lawsuit linking Johnson & Johnson baby powder.
Yeah, it was a big number.
That was July 2018.
Yeah, I remember. I know it was a huge number. I didn't realize it was that high. But
St. Louis jury.
And how much did she end up? The guy knocked it down, right?
22 women got split the $4.7 billion, it would appear.
It was
417 was awarded the year before in California. Ovarian cancer.
Wow.
Okay. Well, now it appears by this, whatever this missive on Friday, that Johnson & Johnson is known for once in a while. I don't know how this could happen. Is it asbestos gets into the baby powder?
I think that one of the claims that I saw was that it's a natural occurrence of asbestos where they get talc, and sometimes there are trace amounts in the talc naturally.
Okay. Now, what a trace amount means, I guess that's a court decision. But anyway, so some guy comes in, a gentleman comes on CNBC, and he talks about clearly the stock's a buy. Everything's in there. It's, you know, this has kind of been known for a while, blah, blah, blah. Everything's in a stock. And I'm thinking, this dumb mofo. reason why I say that is when I came out of grad school and I was working at Pullman, of course I wanted to trade options. I was going to do some covered rights. So I bought some shares of, remember Giants Manville, Frank?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, it was my first stock.
Shingles and
yeah,
insulation, right?
Yep.
A lot of asbestos problems.
And so I get in there and I buy the stock at like 28, and I start selling to 30 calls. So there was only 5-hour strikes in those days. And so I sell the 30s for a little while. Finally, the stock's 24. And I go, all right, I better start selling to 25s. Then the stock's like 19. I sell the 20s for a while. Finally, I think I puked out at about 17 or something, thinking this is like really blows. And so that was my first stock ever. So it was not a good one. And they had this, you know, asbestos problem. And so years later, I see this article in the Tribune Finance section, and some guy writes this article about Giants Mansville and how the people that bought it, especially like at 28 and 29, like meaning me. This is like 15 years later. I had conveniently forgotten it. What morons they all were, because you could have just see this whole thing playing out. As more and more people are sick, you know, more and more money is getting dragged out of them. Court cases just keep growing. And hell, basically, only an idiot would have bought it, meaning me, and only an even bigger idiot would have held on for even a while, meaning me more, you know, me squared. And I keep thinking, after having history of one like that, what would cause somebody on like day one to go on national TV and say everything's okay? Why would you ever make that statement? I mean, you don't know. Nobody knows. I mean, he certainly didn't. I certainly didn't.
Because it's in the best interest of the company to do that.
Wasn't a J&J guy. It was an investor guy.
Well, he has a position.
Obviously, man. Yeah. But I mean, it's just, I'm like, how do you do something like that? All right, so market, just a a repricing, an orderly repricing, Frank, or more?
I'm concerned, A, about the volume. I see scary things on the horizon. What's FOMC going to do on Wednesday on their announcement? We're going to be down 100 or up 100.
I think they're going to say that
that's not normal.
They're going to go one more time, and they're going to say they're data dependent next year, nothing planned.
Right, and we have the negotiations with China, and we've already fallen for a lie on that once. Everything's been taken care of. They agreed to this. We're down almost 8% from that fake news 2 weeks ago. Talk about fake news. That was market manipulation at its finest.
Oh, yeah. I had an adult beverage yesterday. I actually contributed to the show in from Singapore for the holidays. And he's very much with the administration on this negotiation with these guys. That I guess I did not realize that someone is if you want to buy into a Chinese place, that they demand whatever code or stuff you have for your product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, we were sort of having an argument, because I think the only way you can police it is by telling people here you can't give it, rather than, I think you can ask for whatever you want, you know, on their side. But anyway, what do you guys think about that?
I think that'd be
I think intellectual property is a problem.
It is.
I'm sure Brendan knows more than me.
Mm-hmm. And I think prohibiting that could cause a lot of problems. I don't know how you would enforce that unless you're going to penalize the company here in the States by either a fine or prohibiting it from doing something. But I don't know how you could enforce that by telling them that they can't give something away in another country.
Well, how can
or through a subsidiary.
How can you enforce the Chinese by telling them they can't ask?
Well, you can't. You've got no control over the Chinese to whether they do or not, whether they ask or not.
Well, that was the crux of our argument yesterday. He thinks it's easier to have a treaty or something where they can't ask than to tell our guys to not give. And I don't know about that.
No, I'm talking about enforcing it. I mean, you can get them to promise anything, but how do you enforce whether there is a Chinese law to that effect, whether it's a treaty or something in law? But how do you enforce it? If you find out that they're not complying with that, how do you get them to stop, or how do you penalize them for doing that?
Well, that's kind of been my point. I mean, my bitch the whole way with the Trump thing is, I don't think they know what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to settle it? Other than declare victory and do nothing like they've been a couple other times.
Mm-hmm. I know. I agree. I mean, a lot of the stuff that is coming out of the administration is declaring victory or bad mouthing the other folks, but there's nothing behind it. There's no substance behind it. There's no enforceability behind it.
Well, what do you think? If there is such a solution, I suppose you could legislate that if Chinese can buy places here, that our guys get to buy places there.
Mm-hmm.
That could be part of a treaty, I would think. Other than that, I don't know what else could you get in there.
Mm-hmm. No, that is a solution.
Or you could just tell people they can't buy them here.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you might get into some due process questions about that. It might be challenged, but you know that's a long way away from being decided.
But if somebody comes and buys Brendan's law firm, how do they not get Brendan's expertise? That's what they just bought.
That is what they're buying.
Well, either you... You say you can't buy it.
Right. But that would also lead to a lot of problems, like due process claims, you know, or racism claims. If there's a connection with the foreign government because they're Asian or Chinese or Japanese or pick the nationality, whether that would ever be challenged on discrimination charge. I mean, odd things happen when you try to enforce these types of laws.
What they won't allow Brennan's law firm to buy a law firm over there.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do on this end to make that even? It's not illegal.
Well, no, but we have no control over Chinese law. We have no control over European law. I mean, and no matter what we say, we can't go into court to enforce that. And they'll just say, well, that's your law. That's not our law.
Well, that's my point. I guess that's my point in a circular way here.
Mm-hmm. We can pass all the laws we want. but it's how do you enforce them? How do you make sure that they're complied with in a foreign jurisdiction? What you do have is the ability. I mean, what you could do is penalize the American company for going over there and giving away its secrets, but that's an enforcement that would affect the American company and their assets here in this country. You really couldn't do anything if they had a subsidiary that was wholly formed in China and enforcing something with them.
Well, I guess that's my point. I don't know how you could because they don't allow people here to buy places there over 50%. I think you could probably do that.
Right, but I mean, no country can really extraterritorially enforce its laws in other countries. I mean, we don't have any sovereign rights in China or in Europe or in South Africa or any place else. And what we have done historically is penalize the American companies here for doing business, like using steel that was manufactured in South Africa for a building here in the United States. You put penalties or you require that that steel girder be taken out of the building or something like
really?
That. Really? But you can't enforce that in South America or South Africa. And okay. we can't go in and say because something is illegal here, it's illegal in Chile or South Africa or Uzbekistan or something like that. We have no country has the right to go into another country like that and enforce its laws in another jurisdiction.
Right, because what I'm fishing for here, obviously, is the operative solution that the administration is going to do one of these days, hopefully intelligently, and that we get along a second before everybody else. Us, my clients and the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
How are we gonna do that?
How much of a betting man are you?
Well, I think we better figure out what the solution is first, and then see how close they're getting to it. Right now, I can't even figure out what the solution is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a ways away.
Yes.
Unlike the Bears.
The Bears.
Maddie, did you go?
I did not go. I enjoyed watching from the comforts of my home.
A little scary with Eddie Jackson twisting his ankle.
Yeah, that was the least celebrated interception I can remember because he immediately goes down awkwardly, and I was like, oh, no. He's such a good player, an important mm-hmm. player on this team. Arguably, he's the best free safety in the game right now.
Yeah.
And when the game is essentially over and he's just trying to go down and give himself up, his foot gets caught in the grass, that was unfortunate, but it turns out at least the early reports are that it's just an ankle sprain. So
yeah, and which can be pretty bad as it is. But the way they showed him walking off the field, and it didn't look that bad. Of course, they hadn't taken the shoe off yet. So sometimes when you take your shoe off after a play like that, it really gets bad.
How do you hurt yourself by going down because you don't want to get tackled in a grass field?
Football players don't know how to slide the way baseball players do.
And yeah, if you watch it, his spike got caught sort of underneath him, and his body twisted his ankle, his own ankle.
Yeah, I was afraid at first it was his knee. Because when I saw the replay, I thought his knee bent in an awkward way when he landed. But fortunately, it wasn't.
My advice is next time, get tackled.
Well, he should have tried to run the clock out a little bit more, but, you know, you're right. I mean, how many times do you see it? And you see it in pickup games where guys who are good players, like good softball players, get hurt in church pickup games because they don't play hard. You know, they're trying to go on an easier way, or you're playing with people who just don't do what's expected, and that's when you get hurt. And
hey, Sunday morning softball, we're out there trying.
I'm going to guess that most of the guys you're playing with on Sunday know how to play the game. You get these people in church league, not church leagues, but you know, church events or like turkey bowl games or Thanksgiving when you get the family together, and people don't respond the way that athletes do, and that's when you get hurt.
Well, that's true. The Bears have been pretty light on injuries. I just hope it stays that way.
Yep.
They got him, and who's the other guy, Matty? Defensive lineman?
Aaron Lynch left the game yesterday with an apparent arm injury. And
I thought he came back.
I haven't read the severity of it.
I think he came back because I remember him going out, and I think he came back later on and made a nice tackle.
Yeah, we'll have to check that. And obviously they lost Callahan the week before, mm-hmm. which was a big loss. He's out for the year.
Yeah. But they may be getting Kyle Long back for the playoffs.
Which would be a great addition, although I think the rookie is really coming into his own.
Yeah.
James Daniels, that guy... played really well against the Rams, against, you know, arguably the best pass rusher in the game. Mm-hmm. Shut him down, and then he was good again yesterday. He had a false start, but besides that, he was really good yesterday, too.
Yeah.
They're starting to run the ball, which they weren't able to do the first couple of weeks. Long was out.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you you watch the Ram game last night where Collinsworth double-team Donald like the Bears did, and he goes, this is three games in a row now. What was the other one? And you cover him deep and just let him throw underneath.
Yeah.
Because that guy won't throw enough in a row to kill you.
That seems to be the blueprint right now for beating the Rams.
Well, speaking of throwing a lot in a row, it was really nice seeing the Bears break up the streak that Rodgers had of no interceptions.
400. Oh, yeah.
402 by the time Jackson intercepted it.
Yeah, 402, and then beating the Bears eight straight times in Soldier Field.
Mm-hmm.
just unbelievable when you think about it.
Although there were a couple
of streak as well.
Yeah, you could argue that a couple times the Packers didn't beat the Bears, the Bears beat the Bears.
Oh, yeah. That's part of it.
It was like the psychological block that they can't beat the Packers no matter what the situation. Even the first game of the season, the Bears should have won that game.
Well, yeah.
They dominated the first half.
Mm-hmm. Even the dropped interception by
Fuller, yeah.
By Fuller at the end of the game would have won it.
And now you're looking at the home field advantage race, mm-hmm. and you have the Saints are 11-2. They play tonight against the Panthers, which is obviously not an easy game, but the Panthers are really struggling. The Rams lost last night, so they're 11-3. And then you have the Bears at 10-4, only one game behind at the number two seed right now, and they own the tiebreaker over the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously winning at L.A. or winning at New Orleans would be tough. Not impossible, but tough. But if they can get home field, I don't think anyone is favored against the Bears in Chicago.
Not right now.
What? I still got a dollar bet for anybody that says if the Chargers get home field advantage, they will not play in at Soccer Stadium.
Wait, you might be right on that.
Say that
if
again?
The Chargers get home field advantage, they will not play in a 27,000 seat stadium. It would look. way too embarrassing for the NFL. There's no skyboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to put the other owner? In the seats?
Especially when they can't even sell that stadium out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's even more embarrassing.
Yeah. But now for the playoffs, I assume they would. But
if they're playing the guy from the Patriots, you think he's going to go sit out with the rabble?
Robert Kraft? No.
With the gridiron washed?
Put him on the bench.
Well, they could do that. But
That's a recipe for disaster. An owner on the bench.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well, what's his name's there all the time? The guy in Dallas,
Jerry Jones.
Yeah, and didn't
Davis used to be that way on the Raiders.
Is his family totally out of that?
No, his son owns the Raiders now.
Son owns it.
Yeah,
and they're going to Las Vegas, right? And that
mm-hmm.
thing's being built.
Yep. It's supposed to be ready in 2020, so the big question is where the Raiders are going to play next year.
I thought they settled on playing at the College Stadium in Vegas next year.
I don't think that's been finalized yet.
I thought it was, because nobody else wanted them.
Well, that's a problem. Oakland doesn't want them to play there next year, and they don't have a stadium right now.
I'll bet Matty Weber could find this out. Hey, we come back. Let's talk a little bit about this Rand Paul deal, where he thinks we're going to be worse than 29. We'll go over that a little bit. S&P futures are down 275. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Brennan Corian. He's Mr. Frank Fahey. Mr. Matt Weber. Me with a little tickle. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howell. Mr. Brendan Cornan, Mr. Frank Fahey, Mr. Matt Weber. We got a full crowd. S&P futures down 350, Dow futures down 40. As the futures down 12 today, the futures up about 6 last night. But like every rally we've seen in the last few days, it's gotten whacked. Now we'll see as the day goes out. We need kind of a down opening finishing up before I think the sell-off's over for like a little while. DAX down 44.4%, FTSE down 28.4%, CAC around down 25.5%, so down a little bit over there. Nikkei up 132, that's 0.6%. Shanghai down up 4, call that flat.
Hang Seng down 6, call that flat. So very good quiet this morning everywhere. We've got oil trying to bounce back up 57 cents, 51.77. Ran up 74. Natural gas, wow, 3.65, down from like 4.50. It's a huge move. RBOB 145, heating oil 186. We got gold at a little bit of a bounce, up $1.90. Silver up 3 cents, not much going on there. Maybe we have for us Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one significant area of concern right now, and it's the outbound Kennedy. It's actually affecting both sides of the Kennedy, but the crash is on the outbound side, blocking the right lane on the Foster Avenue exit ramp there. It's a semi involved in the crash, and it's causing major delays heading out toward O'Hare on the Kennedy at Foster. And on the inbound side, there's gapers that are viewing this crash, and it's slowing them down as well. So that's our big area of concern right now, is the Kennedy at Foster, so keep that in mind. Not affecting the Edens yet, and it looks like the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways are all quiet, so that's good news. Off the expressways, we have one other issue. It's Route 41, North Shore, southbound at Half Day Road. There's a disabled vehicle causing a little bit of a slowdown. But everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, we cool off a bit compared to what we were the last couple of days, but still pleasant. Lots of sunshine, a high of 36. Right now it's mostly clear and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 69 today. Right now it's clear and 44. In sports, the Bears clinched the NFC North yesterday, winning their first division title since 2010 as they topped the Packers 24-17. Mitch Trubisky had a big bounce-back game after he struggled against the Rams last week. He was 20 of 28, 235 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 turnovers, and he had 120 QB rating as he outperformed Aaron Rodgers big time yesterday. Khalil Mack had 2.5 sacks, and Leonard Floyd added a pair of sacks as well. Mack now has 12.5 sacks on the season. That's the most by a Bear since Richard Dent in 1993 had 13. Mack will likely pass him, and Mack missed a couple of games too. So this is one of the better efforts in Bears history as far as rushing the quarterback. Arizona Cardinals were blown out by the Falcons 40-14. Sunday Night Football, it was the Eagles upsetting the Rams in L.A. 30-23. In hockey, Blackhawks were blown out at home by the Sharks 7-3, and Corey Crawford suffered another concussion, so he will miss an extended period of time, it would appear. Coyotes were shut out by the Hurricanes 3-0. Chief.
The Hawks been eliminated?
Maybe not mathematically, but I don't think they're in line for the for the trophy this year.
Scary part is a couple of their guys are actually playing better. Jonathan Toews is having a pretty good year, and
and Kane is still pretty good.
They got nothing though.
Nope. And especially if Crawford is out.
Yeah, who's the backup goalie? Me.
Cam Ward.
That's right.
Manny, got a question for you though about Matt Nagy and his trick plays. A couple of them didn't work very well yesterday. Do you think he's overdoing it a little bit on some of these?
Well, I mean, so the plays you're talking about, obviously the fake punt at midfield when they were up 14-6, that was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I have no problem, you know, doing a fake punt, I have no problem going for it on 4th-and-2 or whatever it was. At midfield, the issue I had was on the third down play. I didn't like the play call, handing the ball off to Mizell, your third string running back, when you have Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard there to try to pick up the 3 yards. That's what I didn't understand. Then secondly,
and that was a wildcat formation. They had Trubisky going out to the side as a receiver.
No, that was a different play. That was a different play.
It was a fumble. That was a fumble.
I'll get to that one in a second. So the second part that I didn't like about the fake punt is it's the most obvious fake punt situation ever. You're at midfield on 4th-and-1. Any sort of special teams unit that has any brains at all is expecting a fake punt. They're in a complete safe play there, and that didn't work. If you really want to go for it, just go for it. Mm-hmm. It's 4th-down-and-1. Otherwise, punt it, try to pin them deep. You're up 14-6. Mm-hmm. That was a play that, you know, obviously could get a lot of scrutiny. But I got no problem, you know, going for it and being aggressive there.
Mm-hmm.
The one that the bigger issue is the one you're talking about on
the fumble.
Yeah, 3rd-and-short, and you instead of just handing the ball off and trying to get the yard or doing a QB sneak or whatever, you split Mitch out wide and do a wildcat with Cohen and Mizell in the backfield, and that just complete and Howard, all three guys were in the backfield, and it just completely botches and you turn it over there instead of, you know, getting the sure field goal or whatever. And that was after the big punt return, and to only get 3 out of that was ugly. You know, but again, I don't. That's who he is. I don't have a problem. I like him being aggressive. Usually the plays work. We've seen a lot of his exotic plays work in the past, and he just had a couple that didn't work. And he said after the press conference, when it doesn't work, you guys bury me, and I expect that. And when it does work, you know, I'm like the offensive guru, and that's
well, he
fine
said
to
that
know.
He said that after last week's game too.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as long as he's willing to take the heat, but some of these, you know, don't seem like the right time for the play.
Well, I just didn't like the play calls.
Mm-hmm.
The aggressiveness I'm okay with, but I just don't
I agree with that too. I like the idea that he's aggressive and coming up with different plays and different looks.
But they always have to work.
Well, they don't always have to work, but I mean, sometimes the results are really, really bad, like the fumble. I agree with Maddie. I mean, with the Wildcat formation, I would have much preferred Trubisky stay in his position and hand off the ball, if that's what they were going to do.
And then the bonehead play by Cohen, where he has the first down. And he just steps out of bounds, like,
yeah.
Like he didn't know where he was on the
short.
Field. Like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a good player, and his that touchdown he had was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
The catch and then the run and the dive over the pylon, I mean, that was big time.
Well, he had another play where he was moving towards the sideline and looked like he was going to run out of bounds, and then he turned it upfield
and
got the first down. And originally it looked like he was going to be a couple yards short. And he just turned the corner, took another three steps, and got the first down.
Whether he is good or bad out there, he's the most fun player to watch that we've had in a long time.
I agree.
He's like Devin Hester, only I think he's better. Well, I mean,
Hester was good at returns, but not much else.
Cohen's a complete player. I mean, he can play running back, he can play receiver, he's a good returner.
I think there's a dramatic difference.
He's actually a really good blocker, too, for being a 5'6 little guy.
Yeah,
there's a dramatic difference above the shoulder blades, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Kevin writes in, if Eddie Jackson was going to hit the ground after the interception, he should have stayed in the end zone. As a bonus, the Bears would have gotten better field position.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true. He took it out. He took it out 5 yards deep in the end zone, and I think he went down at like the 12 or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
I was surprised he did.
I was too, and he's a guy that obviously has a history of scoring touchdowns on defense. And I thought, I mean, when he caught it, I think he was thinking, I can take this to the house. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, he realized, no, I can't. I'm just going to go down here, and then he rolls up on his own ankle.
Yeah. Yep.
My criticism of the handoff thing, I actually saw it in person. What was his name? James Street on Texas with the full bone? For your time, Eddie. I can't think of a thing that takes more practice than a full wishbone. When you put the ball into somebody's, essentially in the gut and then pull it out,
mm-hmm.
that thing is an absolute license to screw up every time. If you two haven't done that like 9,000 times, where the guy knows just the feel of when you're leaving and just the feel of when you're pulling.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what happened yesterday.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, they're running that zone read, which is the same thing. You put the ball in the guy's gut and you read what the linebacker does and decide to keep it or not. And they completely miscommunicated because they probably haven't done it a million times.
Right.
You'd be better off actually with Trubisky just doing that
because
he's done it a lot more.
Yep.
But that's exactly what happened.
Because, I mean, that takes a boatload of practice because it has to happen so quick. I mean, one guy, he thinks he's going with it. He grabs it just when you grab it, it's down.
Yeah. And they both have to decide at the right moment, at the same time, that what the play is and who's going to get the ball.
And I don't think you do anything verbally. It's too quick.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything verbally there either.
But I like the fact that he tries stuff. And
That
is the way, though. If you screw it up, everybody's... Why do you think all these guys play only by the book? Because you can't get criticized.
Well, think about Pete Carroll in the Super Bowl. Think about the grief he got
by
passing instead of giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, that cost him a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I just I was most impressed yesterday by Trubisky and his ability to bounce back after his worst game, maybe of his career,
mm-hmm.
last week, and certainly his worst of 2018.
Yeah.
And coming off that injury, he was, you know, he says he wasn't rusty. I think he was. And he was terrible. His footwork was bad, and it was causing him to overthrow balls. And yesterday, to be as accurate as he was and throwing the ball downfield, and he picked up a couple first downs with his legs, and I just thought he was spectacular. I thought he was better than Rodgers yesterday. And if Trubisky plays well, the Bears are showing that they're really tough to beat. I mean, mm-hmm. I think they're better than anyone if he plays well. Because the defense is so good. They can run the ball a little bit. They got playmakers. Parkey's been making field goals ever since the upright game. I think he's like 10 out of 11 or something like that. He's been really consistent. They're a well-rounded team, and it really matters if 10 plays well or not.
Well, knock on my wooden head, but at this time of the year, you start seeing the last year with Long and who else was out, the offensive line was a disaster, pretty much. Now this year, they not only have
Long's out again.
Well, but
they drafted a guy in the second round.
But now they have some pretty serious replacements.
Well, even Weitzman is playing fairly well.
Yeah. I mean, I think
he had some problems a couple of games ago, but he's holding his own right now.
White really hair, the center, yeah. He has a problem snapping the ball,
Now White hair.
Oh, I thought you were talking about White hair.
No, I'm talking about Brian Weitzman, or Weitzman, the guard.
Gotcha.
He had a couple of bad games where he was really struggling. But lately, you don't hear him being called for penalties, and he's doing a good job keeping guys out of the backfield.
But, I mean, you look at the Bears 85 team, how good that team was, well, for many years. And the offensive line never missed a start for like 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, but right now, the Bear offensive line was not probably in the top 10 in football. But this week, with nobody hurt, I'm gonna bet they're the top ten in football.
Why do you keep saying no one's hurt? Their best one is out.
Well, but I'm saying one person they can replace, especially when the one person turns out to be pretty good.
Well, yeah, that's why they drafted him high, because Long has a history of getting hurt every year, so they knew they had to get some help inside.
But I mean, I'm watching all these other games at the Triple yesterday, and you know, this team, both of their tackles are out, their center's out. I'm saying right now, if you were to rank all the offensive lines starting yesterday.
Well, that was the problem with the Packers.
Yeah, the Bears are easily top 10, I think. Mm-hmm. Just with the people that are left.
How much of the improvement is the new coach?
Yeah.
Harry Heaston, who came from Notre Dame.
Probably a lot.
I think if he's a Notre Dame guy, you've got to give him 100% of the credit for the improvement.
Very coachable.
Well, he's had three number one draft picks when he was at Notre Dame, which is pretty darn good. But what I'm saying is, right now, Matty, I think you look at people's teams right now, you would not have put the Bears offensive line in the top 10 at the beginning of the year. Now I think they are. Who actually started yesterday?
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know how to rank offensive linemen or offensive lines as a whole, to be honest. But
I'm sure there's somewhere in the stats world.
Oh, there are. Pro Football Focus and some of the other ones will rank them. But the Bears' offensive line, I think without Long, so I think the first part of the year they were very good, both pass and run. Then without Long, they were fine in the passing game, but it took about 3 weeks to figure out how to run block.
Well, he's still one of the best run blockers in football.
Yeah.
You're not going to replace him for that.
Exactly. And then, and now Daniels, I think, has really settled in that left guard spot, and he's been great. And, Brian Weitzman, I think, is the one you were talking about.
Yes.
He is, sort of a second on the depth chart guy, but he rotates in and he's actually been better than Eric Kush, I think, and playing the right guard spot. But, and then you have Massey and Leno on the outside.
And Whitehair's been improving. I mean,
I think Whitehair's a really good offensive lineman. He just has a mental thing where he can't consistently snap the ball. Now,
well, physically, he's right there. He's not, like, what's his name? The guy before him wasn't.
Right.
Grassou.
Yeah, I just think, eventually, maybe as soon as next season, Daniels is going to move to center.
That's where he played in college.
Yeah, that's what he played in college at Iowa, and that's what he was drafted for, and I think they just didn't trust a rookie to come in and play center.
Mm-hmm.
So they put him at guard, and I think Whitehair is a natural guard, and then, you know, Daniels won't have that weird mental snap issue where once every two games you don't know when it's going to pop up, and he snaps one into the ground or over Trubisky's head or whatever.
Yeah, but he's improved. I mean, those situations aren't as plentiful as they were before.
Yeah, I think he's a really good blocker, and they pull him and put him in traffic and space. Mm-hmm. And I think he's really
well. As a
really
center, good. They get a big plus by him pulling too.
Absolutely,
there aren't very many teams that have a center that can pull.
No, I think the offensive line's played pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I say if you were to do a list right now of combining all the injuries and all the everything, the teams look a lot different than they did at the beginning of the year.
That's how it is in the NFL every year.
It's always like that by every the end of the season.
So right now, where do you rank everybody, Manny? I have the power rankings last week at the Bears number four.
Well, they've got to be above the Rams right now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could definitely argue that. I would say, so starting in the AFC real quick, I would say the Rams or Chargers and the Chiefs are 1A and 1B, and considering the Chargers just beat the Chiefs, you could argue that they should be ahead of them. They're both 11-3. And then you'd have to put the Texans probably third, depending on what order you do Chiefs and Chargers. And then for that fourth spot, is it the Patriots, who have lost two in a row and are 9-5? Is it the Steelers, who beat the Patriots yesterday, 8-5-1? The Colts look really good. They shut out the Cowboys. They've won two in a row. They're 8-6.
Yeah, where do they come from all of a sudden?
Well, Luck's healthy.
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's been out the last few years, and he's back, and they're playing a lot better. On the
He's progressively gotten better throughout the season, too.
That's true, absolutely. On the NFC side, I would say the Saints are the clear number one, but if they lose tonight, then it gets jumbled up. And then you have the Bears and the Rams, depending on how you rank those at 2 and 3, you probably put the Bears number 2 at 10-4, the Rams having lost two in a row at 11-3, number 3. Then it really, you take a step down from there. You have the Vikings at 7-6-1. You have the Cowboys at 8-6. They just got shut out.
What happened to those Cowboys last night? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, the Seahawks, who were the hottest team in the NFC, and everyone thought they were like this sneaky team. They got beat by the 49ers yesterday in overtime. They're 8-6. And then you have the Panthers, who have lost 5 in a row. They're 6-7. They have to win tonight against the Saints. Otherwise, they're eliminated. Packers are eliminated. Eagles at 7-7 all of a sudden are back in it and only one game out of the NFC East.
A question about their quarterback.
Well, they had a couple of weeks when we could have played deep back for them.
Yeah, and then Foles played yesterday with Wentz out, and Foles played really well, just like he did in the playoffs last year. So, it's really interesting, but I don't think anyone is a clear-cut team that's better than the Bears, except for maybe New Orleans at home. Now, if New Orleans had to come to Chicago, like I said, I would take the Bears over New Orleans in Chicago. If it's in New Orleans, I'm definitely taking the Saints.
But what about the Cardinals? No,
the Cardinals are 3-11. They're the worst team in the NFC.
And you think they're worse than the Giants?
Oh yeah, the Giants are 5-9 after losing yesterday.
How the hell did they beat the Bears?
Well, we had Chase Daniel at quarterback, which didn't help, and it was an overtime game on the road. It's the NFL. The Cardinals are tied with the Raiders at 3-11 for the worst record in the NFL. So they're fighting for the number one seed.
I don't see the Raiders way to the top here. Do you?
Well, they've definitely got to make some better personnel decisions than they did earlier this year.
Yeah, they traded Mac for 2 first round picks, which are looking like they're going to be low first round picks because the Bears are good, and they gave a second round pick back, which is going to be a high second round pick because they're bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not even much difference between the Bears first round and their second round.
Exactly,
like three picks.
So the Bears get Mac for the foreseeable future, who's the most feared end in the game right now, rushing the quarterback. And they basically swap one pick and give up another.
That's special. Hey, Frank, while we still have you, I want to talk a little bit about this article from your hero, Ron Paul. Interesting thing here is this is it's written by Stephanie Landsman from Futures Now, whoever the hell she is. Anyhow, he's talking about he thinks we're going to have a 1929 sort of market drop. Do you feel anything like that?
No. Isn't that been his whole shtick the whole time? The debt. The debt is going to take us down. Things look good, but beware of the specter of the debt. He's calling for a 50% correction.
Then he claims we'll come out of it. We're not exactly a world war. How do we come out of that this time?
I have no idea.
When something like that
has always been so far on the fringe that he makes his son look like a mainstream thinker.
Well, I mean, I guess at this point, if you are very, very concerned about debt, I mean, this is the same thing I look at with our administration. I come across, in fact, my friend John Lee accused me of being like a fan of China. I'm like, John, nobody is less of a fan in China than me, but I just don't understand where they're going with this. I want, when somebody starts a fight, it's over whatever. It's over you cutting down my tree. If you agree to not cut down the tree, we'll stop the fight or something, There needs to be some rationale to it. And I don't get this Chinese thing, but we have all this debt. I don't get the rationale of how we're going to get rid of it. I also know the current mantra of the geniuses in the world, the economic geniuses, are that I use a Milton Friedman term, and a stock and flow analysis. How's that, Brendan? First time in the morning.
Pretty good.
You don't care what the stock number is. You don't care what your debt load is. You just care if you're if your growth is faster than the growth in the debt. So if your GDP is growing 3% and your debt's growing 2.99, you just buckle up and say the hell with it. And in the year, you know, 2075, everything's going to be okay. And you don't even worry about it. And there's some economists that are sort of like that. I'm not part of that group necessarily. I don't know how you turn that bus necessarily around. I mean, are we end up having people having to take a haircut on their U.S. debt? Once you get into that spot where you can't afford the interest on it, how do you come out of that exactly? I mean, at least the people in the Great Depression, they were dumb about a lot of things, but they weren't dumb about one thing, is that the last thing you wanted is to throw a lot of money at the problem, and 5 years later we're still in the Depression, and oh, by the way, we're broke too.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you come out of that?
Well, there are two things that got us out of it in the Depression. One was a lot of government spending for some of the things like the WPA and the CCC to rebuild infrastructure, even if it was guys digging a hole, then refilling the hole, then digging it out, but it was government subsidy. And then the primary thing was World War II.
Right. So yeah, that's a problem. Do we really want another war?
A very expensive war.
Well, I do.
We have two right now, which are very expensive.
Yeah, but it's not doing anything to reduce the debt load.
No.
No, not at all.
I mean, in contrast, World War II.
Speaking of debt load, the European Central Bank is going to stop buying bonds, so mm-hmm. we're going to have a problem there potentially mm-hmm. on the horizon.
And do you think that China is going to continue buying debt if the impasse continues?
Well,
the markets slowed. Growth has slowed there for the first time in what, 40 quarters?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, Frank, that them buying the debt was totally something they never should have done. They never got anywhere near the dollar bang for the buck they thought they did. It's going to turn out by history as saying it's a total disaster. Same thing here. Buying up all these mortgages and not helping the people in the house. Just helping the banks. The way they did it, I'm going to say, well, let's put it this way. If I wrote the history book, it would be a total disaster.
Well, the banks never learned their lesson, so they didn't change their behavior and start doing business in a more rational and sane manner.
They learned their lesson that if you're the big banks, no matter how bad you screw up, you always get bailed. The small banks, not so hot.
Too big to fail.
That's right. I mean, but I don't. So what are we doing here if we start talking about the debt load gets too big? I mean, this guy Paul's not that far off in the sense that. You know, if the Trump tax cut, which already is pretty much, in terms of what it was designed to do, to get us 4.5% growth, it was never going to do that. All it did was cut taxes for certain people. And by the way, I think it actually...
Short-term boost.
Well, it did a nice job for corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the tax receipts right now, you see individual tax receipts last year are up 6% and corporations are down, what, 13, Frank? Some number?
Mm-hmm.
So... They cut receipts from corporations.
The Republicans didn't even win the gamble on the tax bill because that was really designed to improve their standing in the election of 2018, that the big boost was going to come to the public, and they'll see how great the Republican tax bills and the legislation was and give them a big boost in the off-year election. That did not happen.
Well, we only have a minute here, Frank, while we have you. Let's say, for instance, he's half-assed right, and we're down 35%. You know, the S&P's 1900. Okay. Now what? I mean, we've got a debt load that's bigger, we got growth that's not as big as it's supposed to be, and people just lost money on their stocks. Now where are we? How do we get out of it?
I don't have an answer.
What do you mean? You got 30 seconds.
I know, only 30 seconds. I got in trouble on my 30-second answer last week. Maddie had the answer.
Maddie had the answer. How could that be? Maddie's having the answer more often lately, isn't he?
That's very rare, though.
Must mean he's getting older on us or something.
Well, we can all have an answer. It's just a question of how good does it sound.
That's right.
And how long you have to wait for it to come to fruition.
Yeah. No is an answer, too, remember.
Yes, yes. Frank, thank you very much,
buddy.
And
I was wallowing. I mean, anything would have sounded better.
God. Maybe we'll talk to you later in a week. Frank, S&P Futures still down 3.
John.
We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Got rid of that Fahey guy because he couldn't solve the world's problems in 30 seconds.
That's yeah, you gave him 30 whole seconds.
Yeah, it's what do we do with a $22 trillion debt load? Boy, I don't know. All right, Frank, you're off. S&P futures down 4. Dow futures down 77. NASDAQ futures down 17. So much for the up move last night. Boy, somebody woke up after the one of the football games last night and sold that. All right, Matty, we were just discussing on break in here. Why did the Sox trade for another first baseman? Or sign another first baseman?
That would lead me to believe that they're going to be trading Abreu, but I don't know.
Yeah, I thought they were going to trade him too, but I also hope that that does not mean that they're going after Machado.
Well, I think they're in the running for Machado and or Harper. Are they going to get either one of them? I don't know. I would say probably not, but it's definitely possible. And then if you're going to clear up money by getting rid of Abreu, that would make sense.
No, I agree with that. But my point is I don't want to see them get Machado. I think he is a horrible overall, he would be worse for a team than the benefits he brings by his baseball talent. With his attitude of not hustling in situations, with the play he had in the playoffs where he tried to hurt the first baseman of the Brewers, I just don't think he's the kind of a guy that you want, especially on a young team like the White Sox.
Yeah, I could see that. I totally see that argument, and I don't even necessarily disagree with it. I typically think you just want to put the best players out there, but and he got to the World Series last year. It's not like he ran that team into the ground or anything.
Well, no, but he wasn't there for a full season, and he had a lot of ball players around him who were experienced.
When you're no talking doubt. But
when you're talking about a young team with a lot of guys coming up from the minors, you don't want that as your leadership core.
You don't want Bryce Harper either, I don't think.
I mean,
I'd much rather have a guy like Abreu who works with the young players than a guy like Machado who is pretty much a selfish and dirty ball player.
I don't disagree with that. Whereas Harper is not what I would call a selfish or dirty ball player, but Machado definitely appears.
There's a reason why that team has underperformed the entire time he's been there. He might be it.
Well, I wouldn't say they've underperformed the entire time he's been there. They've made the playoffs multiple years. Last year they didn't, obviously.
In Dusty, we trusty.
Yeah, when Dusty was there, they were great. But, you know, the Dodgers were really struggling last year. Then they acquired Machado, and then they went on a huge run and ended up going all the way to the World Series. I know he had something to do with that. But Brennan's right. That was a team of veteran guys that, you know, welcomed him in, and it could be different if you put him with a bunch of young guys.
By the way, is there the guy who got hurt early last year? Is he supposed to be good to go this year?
Corey Seager?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Yeah, he's supposed to be back. And
What did he have, though?
I thought he had Tommy John surgery or something, didn't he?
He did. As a shortstop,
that's right.
Man, that's wild.
Yeah.
Starting to get a few more of the position players having that.
Overuse injuries.
Well, how can they be that much more overused than the guys used to play every
because
single day?
Because when they're growing up now, they're playing baseball 10 months, 12 months a year.
It could be, yeah.
There was an article in the Tribune last week about that, about young kids who are 12 years old, 10, 12 years old, who are starting to have issues like that, like Tommy John surgery, not non-pitchers, but position players.
Joe Maddon said something. I've heard other guys say this too, but he thinks a big part of it is kids aren't playing multiple sports.
Right,
now.
I agree with that.
And he goes, your body needs to like play multiple sports,
absolutely,
and use different parts of your body, and it sort of prevents injury. Whereas if you're just playing baseball, like a lot of these kids are, because mm-hmm. it's like, you know, a factory, and you're just all you're doing is the exact same muscle movements from age like 9, it's leading to injury.
Absolutely,
and I think there might be some truth to that.
And this is the result of Todd Marinovich. Remember him, the super quarterback from Southern Cal?
Yeah,
never had a McDonald's hamburger.
Right, but his father was creating him to be
until he got out of the house
an NFL quarterback.
Until he got out of the house, then it all fell apart.
He was one of those guys who was treated that he had to do football year round, and anything he did was designed to make him an NFL quarterback. And the more kids you have doing that, you're pigeonholed in a certain sport. Usually, it's the parent sport. At a very young age, you mean a guy who you may want to groom as a football player, maybe a better hockey player. But if he's playing football or football related sports and workouts for 10 months a year, he's not going to develop as a hockey player or as a basketball player or anything else. You don't see the four star Letterman anymore in high school.
It's fun playing multiple sports too.
I agree.
I enjoyed playing. everything. I even played football for a little while, and then I took one hard hit, and I was like, that's enough of that.
Yeah, that was I could never get into the coaches screaming at you 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, the worst part about football, in my opinion, was film. Like, the day after a game, you'd sit and watch film, and, like, of course, you knew when you made the one big mistake that you made that game, because everyone kind of had one, and you knew it was coming, and you were just hoping the coaches would overlook it, and, of course, they never did. And then they would rewind it 20 times and keep pointing out what you did wrong. You're like, yeah, I know, I got it. And your teammates are giggling. That was the worst part of football.
Oh, God.
The film breakdown was so intense, even playing, you know, ninth grade.
Mm-hmm. One of my guy traded for me, and we played ball with him forever. Bobby Bades, real nice guy. He since moved to Indiana, but he's a really good ball player, every sport pretty much. His son is like 12, and he goes, yeah, they want him to declare. I go, declare what? He goes, what sport? I goes, he's 12. What are you talking about, declare?
Yeah, should be playing everything.
Yeah.
We were in college, and as soon as the calendar changed, it'd be football on the quad every night after class. Touch football. As soon as it got too cold, in the gym for basketball for 4 months. As soon as it got, then we were into softball in the spring.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's the best.
Yep.
But I don't, some of the muscles are the same, but not too many.
The movements are different.
You still got to be able to run.
Yeah.
But you run differently.
You do. Absolutely.
You run a lot differently playing basketball than you do playing baseball or track or even football.
It's completely different.
Well, the weird part is that the guys who played basketball every night could run all night. One of the guys from the football team, he was a cornerback. His first day at the rack, he was gassed. I mean, it was not the same as football. After a day or two, he was fine.
Right.
But it just took him, wait a minute. You know, the play in footballs is, what, 2 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get 40 seconds to rest.
Well, that mm-hmm. was like our buddy Scoffy. You remember Nick?
Yeah.
One time I needed him as a sub. This is, it's probably 10 years ago, but I needed him as a sub.
He's a prodigious smoker, though, too.
To play basketball. And he, at that point, was running. In fact, he had just completed like a half marathon a week before. He was training. He was in great shape and running. He said he was running like 15 miles a week, this whole thing. And then I was like, well, listen. He goes, I'm not a great basketball player, but, I can play defense and I'll rebound. And I go, perfect.
I can hack.
Right. We just need a guy. Halfway through the game, he's gassed. He has to mm-hmm. come out. He can't even breathe. I'm like, I thought you were training. Like, you just ran a marathon, for
it's
God's
different.
Sake.
It's a lot different.
Yeah.
Those sudden bursts, and you're moving a lot faster in those bursts.
And it's physical. Sports. You got yeah. guys bumping you the yep. whole time, and holding you, and yeah.
That's why some sports you wouldn't even guess. I mean, when I was a pretty serious handball player, if you're playing somebody really good, and you're not bad, a point could be, 15, 20 hits a person. We were back and forth on the court, one side to the other, up and back, ceiling shots, sending you back, that sort of thing. And as soon as you get the ball, by the time you get back to the line, you're not even breathing hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your recovery from what do they call anaerobic activity, it's like a constant wind sprint. And it's for that type of activity, one of the best things that I used to do, somebody told me this, is you go out to a quarter mile track and you sprint the straightaways and walk the curves.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird part, even after when you're in some kind of shape, I couldn't do it now. The first couple of days, you stop sprinting at the end of the straightaway. You're not ready to run again by the time you get to the end of the curve. But after 3-4 days of it, you're almost bored. You're halfway through the curve and you already got your breathing back, and you're saying, "Why am mm-hmm. I walking?" You start running earlier just to get it over with.
Yep.
You say you're going to do it 10 times. It's amazing how quick you
that's the adaptation.
You adapt.
Yep.
And because then you're sitting there going, why am I going to walk this last 50 feet? I might as well run. I'll get it done quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get to whatever you're, but you could take a guy, a marathon runner, put him on a handball court. I mean, he'd be dead. He'd be dead.
Yeah.
First day or two.
I agree.
But
And the other way around too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
If you put a handball player trying to run a marathon, he'd be dead.
Oh yep. Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, he'd be walking, basically. But all the Bear guys are out. It's the other Bear guys, not just the Bear guys. Chicago Bears. By the way, I deflated. She's such a sweet chick. The girl at Tripoli who does the education she does one-on-one, or not one-on-one. She has a smaller class. She grew up for a period of time in Asia. So what she does is people come over here from China that learn the language. She she teaches them, like, even for business situations, Brendan, like the, shall we say, slang, humor, the things in the language that are really hard to pick up if you're from some other place. And she goes, and she really loves it. Because all of a sudden the kids learn what other people are saying, and they're so happy that they can actually laugh at a joke, you know, type of thing. And, well, she was wearing a t-shirt yesterday, the Monsters of the Midway, and I said, you realize, of course, that that's essentially a stolen phrase. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, what do you think that is? She goes, well, that's the Bears. I said, no, it's not. It's the Maroons. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, the Monsters of the Midway were the University of Chicago. The Bears stole their slogan when they essentially dropped football.
They also stole the colors of the University of Illinois.
Yeah. The Bears are just, Al is just copycatted every school around.
Well, Red Grange came from Illinois, right?
Yep.
And he was a barnstormer. Who was the guy, the Howard Stern of football players? Why is that, Manny?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Red Grange. He signed a contract, sort of like Howard Stern going to...
Sirius?
He signed a contract that they couldn't afford to pay unless he made the money so they could pay him. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They promised him $20 million a year, but they didn't have $20 million. Unless he went out and got $40 million worth of advertising, they took half and gave him $20. Like Red Grange, Papa Bear couldn't afford to pay him what he said he would, so they barnstormed. They'd go to some high school field somewhere and play a football game against some schmoes. How many games do you think he played his first year, Brennan? 50, 40?
Something like that.
Or you go out you go out and play an extra game. The gate is, $2,000. There's $500 of what they promised him. So he essentially made the money that he got paid. And Hallis wasn't going to pay him no matter what. He didn't have it. Isn't that weird?
It's interesting.
Well, can you imagine now if you told these guys they had to play 15 other exhibitions games to get their paychecks?
No.
My uncle was playing in one of these, I think it was at Eckersall Stadium. Remember that place?
Oh, yeah.
My uncle played 12 years of professional football in the Depression for one of the sub-teams, leagues. There was a lot of leagues. It wasn't just the NFL, not like now. And he played for some outfit called the West Side Armory. And he got paid, whatever, $40 a game, $50 a game, something like that. They'd go on a train and they'd go places, so they'd play. I mean, what do you figure? How many people show up at those games? 1,000, 2,000? A buck a guy or something? And everybody'd get, $25, $30, $40, depending who you were. So they're playing the Bears, and they're beating the Bears at halftime. So my other uncle goes over and listens to Hallis. Of course, halftime, they just sit down at one end of the field. And Hallis is reaming these guys a new behind. He goes, if you don't win by 3 touchdowns, I'm fining everybody $25 a man. And the only thing he had going for him, though, is he hadn't put Nagurski in yet. So Michael goes, they put this guy in there. Talk about a man among men. He was way bigger than anybody trying to tackle him. He said, guys that were really good tackles are bouncing off him like he was a dinosaur. He carried the ball 3 times, he had 3 touchdowns. Nobody can bring him down. He was that huge compared to other people. And he was a Franco Harris in a time when there were no Franco Harrises kind of thing. And so they won by their 3 touchdowns, so nobody got fines. Everybody was happy except my uncle because they got their ass kicked the second half. But the history of sports is very interesting. At one point, wasn't Hallis the ticket taker, the owner, the treasurer? Then he got his uniform on and played in, and he was the coach, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All in the same.
I remember that story about him.
And a different world. All right, so we've got...
He also put the traveling schedule together and arranged for their train tickets and everything else.
Well, yeah, he was one man band. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've stopped. We haven't talked about it yet as much. Now, everybody in the world is... Market's going down. We're down 3% really last week. We got Ron Paul talking about a worse than 29 deal. We got everybody else talking about big sell-offs. Amazon to get cut in half. If you look at these charts, it might not sound so crazy. Blah, 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 blah. The fact is, how far can we go, Brendan? Should we go? Can we go? Will we go?
I think there's more room to go down. And I think that there is still a world of trouble about to hit in D.C., with the investigation closing in on Trump and the Trump administration. I think we have not seen the worst of that yet. It takes time to build cases against an individual or against an organization. And I think within the next year, there's going to be a significant closing of the loop around a lot of the stuff that's happened in the Trump administration. And the political operatives who know how to work the levers of government are not in the Trump administration to help them through this crisis.
He doesn't want them anymore.
Regardless of the reason why,
yeah.
They're not there. And I don't. I think, by analogy, a lot of the problems we saw in Illinois when Bruce Rauner was governor, we see on the federal level right now, that Trump and the folks that he's got in his orbit right now don't know how to work the levers of government. He's used to having a small corporation where he says jump and they say how high and try to go a little bit higher than that. He can't do that. Rauner couldn't do that in the state of Illinois, and Trump can't do that. And he also cannot hide the way that he could while he was the king of his empire in real estate development. And even in there, he had a lot of setbacks in bankruptcies and things that failed. He cannot hide those in the position right now without savvier political operatives around him. And I don't see that developing right now.
Well, you have these are the things that really concern me, and I honestly don't. I don't know where they're going to end, Brennan. That's a problem because it. Well, for me it is because I like to have a feeling of where things can go. I knew that when you and Maddie's been listening to this for way too long. You don't want to pump asset prices up because when you do artificially and they come back down, it's a bigger problem than if they never went up in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that so many times. I'm not going to explain why I feel that is. Some of it has to do with taxes. A lot of it has to do with margin loans, those kinds of things. If houses go from 180 to 250 and back to 180, somebody took a loan on the extra 70.
Yep.
You know, that they may have, at the end of the day, shouldn't have. It seemed fine when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. So what you run into here, I mean, I think anybody who really is honest with themselves, what the Fed did was unconscionable, went down to zero, put all that money into the system, way more than there needed to be there. There's no doubt they should have been accommodative after 2008, but there's a limit on everything, Maddie and Brennan. So when they start drawing that out of there, the asset price, to the extent that they're artificially pumped, and you hope it's only 4%, 5%, 6%, 10%, and we're down what? We're roughly 10% from the highs, and I'm really hoping this is about as far as we go, maybe another 5%. But now when you have this debt problem where interest rates are creeping up to, I'm going to say not even a low normal level. I mean, it's not even normal. It's a low normal. The problem you have there, the federal government now is used to paying zero and now they're paying 2.5 really across the board.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem because you got $21 trillion in debt or 24 if you believe Colonel,
mm-hmm.
who I happen to believe. So now you've got that sort of issue. Now the question is, can even a modest come back to where maybe you should have been in the first place, is that enough to cause a spiral? And in the place I look for that, this is the part that I'd love to have some listener input and everything, is how bad is the general population? Is there slack there to where people are doing well, where if you had to hit them up with 10% more taxes, could you? I mean, that type of thing. How much, I'll use the term slack, is there? Not in the labor market, not in anybody, but in the individual balance sheets of Americans. And I'm going to say, I don't think there's enough. I honestly don't. I talk to people all the time, as you know, more so than maybe I should. I should be out, running along the lakefront probably. I'd look better. But the fact is, I talk to people a lot. I don't know of one person in any business that has got their own business, be it saloons, restaurants, brokerage firms, you name it, that is feeling fat and happy. They're okay. Maybe they're growing. I mean, we're fine. But it's not like you would expect with what is going on market-wise. I mean, these have been pretty good years for PTI, but they've not been phone ringing off the hook, people dying to be in the market. That's not happened anywhere across the board, Brennan. I mean, you look at anybody, every single person that I know as an entrepreneur, especially people that are paying their own health insurance, is one emergency room visit away damn near of being in the bankruptcy court.
Well, I agree with that, and I think it's very dangerous. And, you know, part of the problem, and you hit on it, with interest rates going to zero and the fact that you can't earn anything on investments, that was a big cushion for years and years. I mean, you look at our parents' generation when they would put their $10 a week in the bank and would earn some interest. Over the years, that would grow. And when you couldn't get earnings on your investments, you know, that cushion has gone away.
I think it's been $350 to $375 billion out of savers for 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to get that money back.
Nope.
And it went into the hands of banks and a few people, and in some insurance companies and other places. And it, I don't see how you turn this bus around unless you can somehow start really everywhere with the amount of monopolies, the amount of oligopolies. There's a lot of work to do, Brendan. There's a lot of work to do. You got to break up these insurance companies. You got to do a lot of stuff to get more people working there and to get more competitive rates. And the idea, I mean, Carl, I think the most, out of all of our guests and hosts and everything, the guy that's hit the nail exactly on the head, not using that term, is Carl. Unless you identify what this medical stuff is doing to corporations and people, unless you find a way to break that bag, the back of that, we're not coming out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, when I heard it the first time, I'm like, Carl's exaggerating. And the more I look at it, the more I think he's right.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way on earth that you can have some of the Obamacare, by the way, that might have been tossed out the other day. Some of the plans people are getting, and I know some people that are, if you're 55 to 65, God help you, Brendan, if you're not getting your stuff from work, mm-hmm. I'm going to say that you can probably find a plan that's $1,000 a month with probably a $5,000 deductible and maybe 30% copay the whole way after that?
I don't think you can find that as an individual.
Really?
I don't think you can find that as an individual. And the coverage, the doctors and clinics that you can get are so slim that, I mean, Val was looking at that for a couple of years in the individual market. And, you know, I don't think even people who can afford to pay high premiums cannot get that on the individual market.
You can if your deductibles are high enough.
No, you cannot. You cannot get the scope of doctors and clinics that you want, regardless of what you're willing to pay.
Well, every single person that I know of that had a plan this year, no matter what it was, Blue Cross or whatever in Illinois, maybe they went through the Obamacare, every single person has been notified that plan will not be available next year at the plan next
That's
year.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah.
That for a lot of individuals, the plans that they wanted are not being offered by the insurance companies, regardless of your ability to pay the premium. I mean, even if you were somebody comparable to J.B. Pritzker or Bruce Rauner, and your premiums were $10,000 a month with a high premium, it's not available to buy. Even if you were willing to pay that kind of a premium, it's not available.
Well, what I'm saying is if Val went online today, because I know somebody just did this, I think she would find premiums that aren't all that high, but you don't get very much.
Right, and you don't get doctors that and hospitals.
You can pay up to get the better hospital, but the point is that your deductible is going to be very high, and you're going to pay
catastrophic insurance at best.
But even at that, because you're probably paying 30%. If it's a $100,000 bill, you're up for 30.
I know, but that's still catastrophic insurance.
Right. Okay. I agree, but I mean, the 30 is going to put you out.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number of Manny? You can look this up on. We got poor Manny working hard. What percentage of all bankruptcies are because of medical bills? It's 70-80%.
There's a very high percentage of that.
You know, Audrey tells me now if you go buy a house and they're looking at your credit rating, whether you get a mortgage or not, if you had a medical problem, they don't even count that against you because it's so widespread. People own an emergency room, $5,000 or something, they can't pay them?
According to a recent study, 62% of all bankruptcies are filed due to medical reasons.
That's a lot. It's not as much as I thought, but it's a lot. I mean, no, nobody has. In the middle class, you're talking about the average family has savings is $11,000. Mm-hmm. There's no way you got room there for $10,000 medical. SP Futures down 4. Come back with Mr. David Animal. He's going to tell us where the bottom is, if there's a bottom. Be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
All right, so the question of the day is why, instead of looking at the Spoos last night up six, and going to watch the second half of the Philadelphia game, did they make a call and sell five futures? Because once they're up, you got to sell them. What does it matter with me? They're now down 975. Dow futures down 110. NASDAQ futures down 23. Whack, 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 like whack. I'm old, for God's sake. Over in Europe, DAX now down more. All these things are down more than the last time we did this. Down 77.7%. FTSE down 37.5. CAC around down 36.7. Over in Asia, a very slow and mixed market. Nikkei up 132.6, but still 21,506. Shanghai up 4, call that flat. Hang Seng down 6, call that flat. We've got oil up 34 cents now, was up 50, 51.54. Brent up 42 cents, 60.70. This is a big, evidently, Matty, you're a meteorologist. or the little warmer week we have here, is taking natural gas from 450 to 368. Ouch, if you're long natural gas. Gold is up 240, silver up 5 cents. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, top airs.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That earlier crash on the outbound Kennedy still has the Foster Avenue exit ramp closed. It was a semi involved in that crash earlier this morning where a semi hit a light pole right on the Foster Avenue exit ramp, and cleanup continues there.
How did the pole do?
Pole, we're thinking, probably lost that collision, but the Foster Avenue exit ramp on the outbound Kennedy is closed, and this is affecting travel times on both the inbound and outbound Kennedy at Foster, so keep that in mind. Kennedy over an hour now out to O'Hare from downtown. Edens is slow because of this crash as well. Traffic building on the Eisenhower, and we have a disabled vehicle blocking the center lane on the outbound Ike just before Ridgeland Avenue. So the old post office to Mannheim is about 29 minutes right now. To Route 390 is 42 minutes as traffic builds on the Eisenhower. Stevenson looks okay. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all quiet. Out in the western suburbs, out near Wheaton, Roosevelt Road at Gables Boulevard, there is a crash causing delays. But nothing else in the area as far as accidents or incidents are concerned. So enjoy a relatively quiet commute unless you're coming in on the Kennedy. Weather today, lots of sunshine. We cool off just a bit. Yesterday we were in the mid-40s. Today our high will just be 36 with wind chills in the low 30s. Right now it is mostly clear and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 69 today. Right now it's clear and 45. In sports, the Bears are your division champs, Chief. They're now 10-4 on the season after beating the Packers 24-17 at Soldier
Field. And how come you don't have their fight song ready to go here?
I actually could cue that up. Mitch Trubisky threw a couple of touchdowns. Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd combined for 4.5 sacks as they were in the backfield all game long. Aaron Rodgers had an interception to Eddie Jackson, who tweaked his ankle on that play. They're saying it's a high ankle sprain, and he's day-to-day. He left the game in a walking boot, so hopefully he's okay. Bears finished the season at San Francisco and then at Minnesota, but they have the division wrapped up. Now they have their sights set on earning a first-round bye in the playoffs, as they are one game behind the Rams for the number two seed, and they own the tiebreaker over L.A., so if the Bears can win out and the Rams lose one more, the Bears would get a first-round bye and get to host a home game en route to, hopefully, an NFC championship. Cardinals were blown out by the Falcons 40-14. Sunday Night Football, it was the Eagles over the Rams 30-23. And NBA basketball, Bulls and Suns were both off. In hockey, Blackhawks were blown out by the Sharks 7-3. Corey Crawford left with a concussion. Coyotes were shut out by the Hurricanes 3-0. Chief.
Well, most of the saloons would want them in the wild card game, right?
Well, if they win, yeah, then you get the extra week.
Well, yeah, you get the extra game. The other thing though about the game yesterday was, unlike the last couple of games, Trubisky did not come close to interceptions.
He was spectacular yesterday.
There were a couple of games recently, well, the game against the Rams, where he could have thrown more interceptions, and you'll get some of his earlier games, and there were just missed opportunities for turnovers that didn't happen. That was not the case yesterday. He looked really well yesterday.
Yeah, the thing with him, too, that's kind of weird, and hopefully this changes, but you can kind of tell within the first series or two of the game whether he's going to have a good game or not. Mm-hmm. And yesterday he was on. He was accurate. He was throwing on the run. That one completion where he the pocket broke down, he made a couple guys miss, rolled out, and then threw across his body to Shaheen.
I was just thinking about that play. Yeah,
25-yard, 30-yard play. That was just a spectacular throw. And he's got that ability, but he's just got to be accurate. He worked all week on his footwork, and he was 20 of 28, 235 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he also ran for a first down.
Yeah. Yeah, he has some escapability. There were a couple of times I thought he was going to get sacked, and he got away from it.
Guys can't get to him. Mm-hmm. He just has that. He has Moose Johnston, who was the color guy yesterday, actually brought it up that he has a great sense of when the pocket's collapsing. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of young quarterbacks don't have that, but he's got that. Where Rodgers has that, and Breeze and Brady, they kind of have that knack for knowing when they got to move.
And, yeah, especially and when it's coming from the backside.
Yeah, he has that, but he's. Earlier in the year, he would just run right away. Mm-hmm. Now he's really kind of waiting, and then running only if he has to. He's still throwing, which is good.
Yeah, there was a comment, I think it was last week, when they were talking about how great he is when he's hitting his first reads compared to when he's looking for a second or his third read if somebody's covered. And he's improving at that. Now he's getting to the point where he's at least patient and doesn't take off if the first option is covered.
Yeah, and that'll continue to improve. That's
maturation. You're right.
The first couple years, you're going to your first read, maybe your second read, and by the time you're in your fourth or fifth year, you can kind of survey the whole field, and that's where hopefully he'll get to.
Mm-hmm. It's a process. I mean, the game is so fast, and they keep changing up on those coverages, and they fake one and do another. I mean, you do need your individual guys that you read, but even that, they know you're reading them, and they're faking you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
David, how are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, the other thing about Trubisky is this was the first game that I've ever seen him play where the vast majority of his interceptions are ones that he threw high when a hand was in his face. And, I mean, he does at times when he's on the run throw low, too. Every quarterback does. But you throw it into the ground, You're not going to intercept many of those. But if you put a hand in his face, he was overthrowing, and that's when the interceptions came. They had hands in his face, and he didn't overthrow. That was the first time I've ever seen that.
I think last week he just wasn't ready. He was still hurt.
But, I mean, way before that, before he was hurt. If you put a hand in his face, he'd overthrow it, and that's when the interceptions came, not yesterday.
Well, I don't disagree. So we've got Dallas laid an egg yesterday. They looked to me like they were up and coming. And now I don't know where they're at.
Seattle, too. Dallas and Seattle were the two hot teams in the NFC besides, you know, obviously the Saints, Rams, and Bears. And they were both kind of the, you know, red-hot world beaters, and they both just completely laid an egg. Seattle lost to San Francisco, who is 4-10 now.
They were 3-10, and every analyst said the one team you don't want to play as a wild card is Seattle. Seattle, they're coming. They lose to San Francisco.
Terrible. And then you have the Cowboys, who, granted, it's a tough game at Indianapolis, but they were never in the game. They got shut out, and they ended up losing 23-0.
Well, there's an example of a team that probably, if you start the year, are saying they got one of the top three offensive lines in football. No, they don't. You got a couple guys hurt.
So,
and they're just okay.
Yeah, so now the NFC East, you have with Washington and Philadelphia both winning yesterday, they're both at 7-7, and the Cowboys are at 8-6, a one-game lead, and with 2 weeks to play. And I don't think any three of those teams is very good, but we'll see how that shakes out. That'll be interesting because that could very well be a Bears opponent in the playoffs.
Washington, where do they get their quarterback? Central casting?
Yeah, who was their quarterback yesterday?
Some guy never heard of him.
Johnson or something?
Jackson, something like that.
Or Jackson.
He was like the four-string guy.
Wasn't it Colin Kaepernick? Isn't he coming back now?
That's so bizarre.
It was Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson. I thought it was Johnson.
First start in more than 7 years.
Wow. And they had a pretty good team, and then all of a sudden the guy's finally out of the hospital. He had all kinds of infection problems.
Oh, yeah, he may never come back, which is sad because he's a pretty good player for a long time. Former number one overall pick,
He almost didn't make it out of the hospital.
Yeah.
A little more important.
Yeah.
But, all right, David, we've stopped talking about it for a second. What do you make of this? How far down are we going?
I'll tell you, the news is bad. I mean, if the market can survive this, it's the bottom. Because, I mean, if you look around, they had this Tom Friedman reporter on, and he tends to be a little on the left side and liberal. But that aside, he's a great, great reporter, and he was all over Europe and the like. And he said, you know, forget the trade tensions. Oh, and he was in the Middle East, too. And he said, Middle East, it's a mess with Saudi, and not just Khashoggi, but, you know, with threatening to remove, you know, support for Saudi against Yemen and whatever. And it's just, you know, bad enemy versus worse enemy. Who do you support? But he said, Europe is an absolute disaster. It was 2.3 trillion euros for the Italian banks and growing and trying to restructure that. And the Brexit thing, you know, they vote to divorce themselves and basically kill their economy, and now they can't get a deal. And, oh, geez, should we have a second referendum or not? And then France, you know, with Macron's policies of, you know, lowering the taxes on the rich and raising them in rural areas on gas, and all these yellow vest protests for 4 weekends, you know, tearing Paris apart. He said Europe is an absolute disaster.
This is not going to be go down 20% and everything will be okay sort of deal. I mean, if it happens, I hope it doesn't, because This is a way to...
Well, and it's continuing. I mean, say the Fed is a one-and-done thing, which I have a feeling in the view of all the events, they're going to take a much more mild view whether they raise or not. They probably will. But then I think they'll take a more mild view. And let's just say, for sake of argument, that, you know, some framework, you're not going to change Chinese policy in the way they've done business and grown, you know, for decades, but a little something, you know, towards a positive end, you know, might lift the spirits of the market. Just between the political turmoil and, you know, Trump issues and his chief of staff and the temporary guy and his ex-lawyer and payoffs, and between that and Europe, I just think, and, you know, signs of, even if the holiday retail is good, the retailers are getting crushed, so evidently, even if the gross sales are good, the margins are bad. It just, unless it's all discounted in the price, it just looks to me like it's going to be a tough go.
Anybody who thinks, after the news of the last week or so, that this is going to be a breakout Christmas season, I want to know what dispensary you're getting your hooch from, because I want to go to that place.
Yeah, and we want a free round.
Yeah. I mean, just the Empire State number, I don't put much chalk in these regional surveys. They expected this thing to come in at 29.5. It came in at 10. That's pretty low.
Yeah, the news is.
I don't understand, David. I really, when you go back and look at the history of the Great Depression, the people who fed the government, everybody thinks they didn't do very much. They tried a lot of stuff. They actually did try a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, a lot of what Roosevelt did were actually Hoover programs, because Hoover did try some stuff. It wasn't the idea that he stood there while Rome was burning and he fiddled. He didn't. He tried pretty much everything. The fact is, when you have a balance sheet depression, which is what that was, when you just yanked wealth out of people, the only thing they didn't try, and they probably should have tried, was some sort of a reverse FDIC insurance, where people got 25 cents back on a dollar for stuff they lost in banks or something. That's the only thing I think that would probably have worked, to refloat the actual person that got hurt. Because this whole, in my opinion, and you guys are economic mavens, this idea that you can save the system without saving the person, I think is very naive. And it played out in that depression, and it played out this time as well. It is playing out. The idea that you
can... Well, and that's the pervade. You look at the banks, and I mean, you know, yeah, they got problems, and is loans actually growing, and the flattening, you know, yield curve, and what? When you look at Deutsche Bank, you know, from whatever, $20, $22, and it's at $8.80. I don't know if it's still hangover from derivatives from 10 years ago, or are they up to their ears in Italian restructured debts or whatever. But there's issues. And you take a Citigroup that's got exposure to Deutsche Bank in Italy, and I like the stock, and I like the buybacks, and I like their dividend growth, and I like that it's selling well below book value. But I mean, the thing doesn't have air to breathe because of all the stuff that it's exposed to.
Well, but the idea, we're saying during the Depression, at least the people who were in charge figured if you come out with some huge plan where you go into some massive debt, if it doesn't work, and sometimes you can throw money at people and it doesn't work. There's times when you could be dragging money out of the system and actually have a deflation and you can have growth.
Right.
After the Civil War. I honestly think the people who are running the country don't do their homework, David, and they're so anxious to save their buddies and the people around them. Federal Reserve is so anxious to save the banks that they forget about the other people.
And themselves.
And themselves, that they forget about the rest of the people. And, I mean, the idea that you're going to go out and pay up for mortgages in 2008 through 2014 from banks and not help the people in there, the house, and all of a sudden now you got very little income going up on individual people. Now you've got this, you know, $4 trillion, the Fed. some of which is okay because it's governmental debt, but a lot of it's not okay because it's mortgage debt. Now what do you do?
Right.
And every time...
Right, and now you're tightening when the housing industry is already in trouble. I mean, just look at, you know, all the Lennar and Toll Brothers and KB Homes and whatever. They're all puking.
Well, my point is, how could you not recognize that we are way out on a limb here, that we actually are creating money really to the tune of, pick a number, $1.8 trillion. We're going to drop this into the economy right now. And they should have been 3-4 years ago horrified at the lack of growth they saw. They should have goosed us for a few years with that kind of money to 3.5-4%. It never happened. Because whatever anybody decided that they wanted to put in the economy, I'm going to say that the medical community took out of the economy and a few others. They sucked the lifeblood out of this entire economy, as Carl Denninger has been so good at talking about. And now all of a sudden, now you've got people paying off mortgages. They're not going back into society. They're going back into the black hole of the Fed. The money's just going out of the system. It's not going to pay somebody at the savings and loan. It's not going for Little League uniforms. It's just gone. But now you've created this. So now you're out buying more and more mortgages just because you can't let the other ones, the money suck out of the system. But it's an absolute bleep storm. And now you got the federal government talking about a $1 trillion deficit next year in what they think is a good economy. Good economies don't have $1 trillion deficits, David. I'm sorry. You know, do they?
Oh, we'll grow our way out.
Yeah.
The old Reagan supply side, oh, that'll work.
I mean, the idea that there can be some logic, but I never could get, and you guys, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir, I know, but when something really makes no sense, if something's like really, really stupid, how does it ever become good for anybody? If you or I, the thought of us, now, Brennan is a serious one percenter. So if he drops you $5 million, he's going to pay you whatever. We'll be cheap with Brennan. 0.5% a year. And you say, Brennan, I just took care of you. What'd you do? Well, I bought these European bonds.
Yeah.
Okay. What am I going to get for them? Well, you're not. You're going to get less than zero. But you still got to pay me.
You're going to pay the heaven.
Yeah, but you're going to pay me 0.5% a year.
Such
watch
a deal.
And them.
So something that is such a disgustingly stupid, is that even a word, is that a phrase? Disgustingly stupid thing to do for a client. How can that be good policy for a government or a central bank?
You had 13 central banks with negative interest rates.
But I'm saying, if you look at it logically, how could that even be?
I have no idea. Bad mattresses to put the money under, or bad safety deposit boxes in your wall? I don't know.
I mean, it's obscene. And yet, so one of these days, it's just like in the Bible, a manna from heaven's going to stop. Then what? All right, I'm sitting here holding this bind. What am I going to do with it? Basically, shove it where the sun don't shine, right? I mean,
right?
I mean, what are we talking about? So the only guy who made money on it is the last guy who sold to the central bank. So we've had
Or how about, you know, when GE brought out 50-year bonds and Apple said, oh, we'll bring out 100-year bonds. You know, we're going to be good for 100 years.
Yeah. I mean, these are insane things to do. And yet,
said the man at Continental Bank.
Yeah, Continental Bank. Didn't they? I knew people used to work there.
I know people used to work there, too, when they were AAA.
They used to be... Didn't they lose all their money in trucking, a lot of it?
No, it was that oil deal down in Oklahoma.
They also had they had extended a lot of credit to people right when the trucking became deregulated.
You know, you might be right about that. I just remember, you could be right about that, because there were transportation things that happened right about the same time as that oil boondoggle down in Oklahoma.
Matter of fact, my guy who was my partner at the time, his wife worked there. She was an attorney. One of you kind of guys. One of you guys. And I think she was in charge. At one point, she told me how many tractors they had. Mm-hmm. That they places had gone under. It was like thousands and thousands of trucks they owned, like new ones.
Mm-hmm.
Then we could all become truck drivers.
Yeah.
Over-the-road truckers.
A big part of that problem wound up being containers. When they started using a lot of containers to ship goods, it really hammered the trucking industry.
Well, remember Trailer Train?
I do.
All right, Manny, what was Trailer Train? I want to embarrass Manny with that.
I don't know what Trailer Train was.
All the all the railroads got together. This is when they first started putting trucks on flat cars. But in those days, they put the entire semi on there, wheels and everything. And so you plunked it, and most of them can handle, what, two trucks, right?
Two semi-trailers.
Yeah. And so the railroads got together and said, you know what, why don't we just all buy these things together and all use them together instead of, you know, this being my trailer train, you being the other. So, okay, they did. There were thousands and thousands of these trailer things around. In fact, the plant next to Pullman, our freight plant, used to refurbish them. They'd get these things. You'd swear a bomb landed on one of them, and they'd put it in one end of the plant, and it'd come out brand new. Well, then they decided, why do you want to put the wheels and everything on there? We'll go with containers. And I don't think, is there any of these trailer trains even left?
Very few.
They've probably all been scrapped, I would guess. But there had to be, what do you think there were, 100,000 of them?
Oh, there were some. I mean, you would see the trains going by, and you'd see just flatbed after flatbed with two trailers on them now. And now you see them with four containers.
Four containers. So it's essentially doubled the the system.
Yeah.
Well, now they have each car has two containers, but it's only a one-wheel truck between the two. They're like permanently married pairs, which is even more efficient. But anyway, there's huge investments in a lot of this stuff, and I think Continental was in all this stuff. But that's another story. But I mean, how much, David, I don't know that we're down. If we go down 25-30%, I don't see the incentive for us to say that's enough. Let's start growing again. I just hope we don't go down that much.
Going to have to look for some kind of technical exhaustion or price momentum indicators to show, you know, severe extension. And in some individual issues, you know, FedEx and whatever, you're seeing a little of that already. But buying indexes right now, I mean, this should be the season, and it isn't. And we have a preponderance of bad news. And so it really does look like sell the rips, you know, and be awfully, awfully selective and hedged if you're going to nibble at anything. And if you're going to do that, if you're going to try and catch a falling sword or whatever, it should be in a nibble. And you should never buy a rally, never buy a rally in anything. If you do want to buy something, the market comes to you. And so that's the way it just looks until it doesn't. And it will show exhaustion when it does, but it's not apparent at this particular point.
So Malaysia has filed criminal charges against Goldman Sachs. So what do you think happens if one day you find out that Lloyd Blankfein got kidnapped and they show a picture of him in a Malaysian jail?
I have no idea.
What do you think, Brendan?
I mean, the stock's already below, what, 160, 170?
Well,
was a $230 stock, and they were all, oh, it should trade at 1.8 times book, and it's below 1 times book.
Well, explain to me how good Christmas is
going. Who knows what value is at this point?
It's very difficult, David. It's very difficult to see. And just because something's
oversold, it's hard to see much more to the downside, and yet until it bottoms, there probably will be more.
I was hoping, and my best guess, actually, not just hope, that when the Fed brought things back somewhat to normal, that we would reprice somewhere between 5 and 10%, and I was hoping no more. But I could also see 20 or 25, because I think that's how much they pumped it up.
But it already has.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only good news. You look at the indexes and they're down 10%. Oh, they're down 11%. That's quote unquote correction because somebody on TV decided 10% was correction. But when you got 43% of the S&P down between 21 and 25% and an issue like a FedEx, a quality issue with really relatively limited exposure in Asia, down 21% in December, this month, and the month is just half over, the market's down way, way, way more than what the indexes say.
What do you think it is? Like I say, how can you be so optimistic about Christmas, not saying you are, with UPS stock down every single day?
Yeah,
that thing is getting annihilated.
And I mean, that's, and UPS, and, you know, and others. And that's, I'm only optimistic as far as gross. It looks like the margins are, you know, way squeezed, and it looks like Amazon continues to build a threat against those transport companies, you know, though the startup costs and, you know, really making, you know, worldwide delivery a very expensive thing. But, you know, how much has $90 off the stock, a third, you know, been discounted? I mean, that would be one that, again, that you know, maybe I'd nibble a little bit on any further weakness, but you can only nibble and hedge and be protected.
David, are they any part of, we only have 30 seconds, read his long article this weekend I probably was going to bring up, we had so much other stuff, the container rates from China to the U.S. have doubled in the last year. Now, who, if you want to take advantage of that, is it too late, or who can you buy in that? I have no idea who's even in that space, do you?
I don't know that.
They will.
I thought that, I don't know that.
S&P futures are now down 14, not so good. Dow futures down 155. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.